And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a Memorial Day weekend edition of Awesome Mania. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and as always, your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Great. It's me, Ben Taylor, a.k.a. Ribcracker.
Ow, my ribs hurt already.
I think I might have done that already, but whatever.
Whatever. But not a lot of major news and notes to talk about, but we get to do something we haven't done in a while, and that's pay-per-view predictions.
We did pay-per-view predictions in the literal last episode, Mike.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, we did Money in the Bank.
I don't remember 2 weeks ago anymore. So we're going to be talking Double or Nothing, which is tonight. We're going to be doing our quick little recap on Money in the Bank. I know, Ben, you have some thoughts on the Money in the Bank itself.
Yep.
News and notes, though, not so much, because some of the news is going to be saved for Double or Nothing, because there are certain matches announced and then changed because of what happened on Dynamite this week.
Yep.
One of the bigger news pieces, though, of the week was there was a WWE departure, and that was Michael Mansouri, who was somebody who is considered to be a successor to Kevin Dunn. Mansouri was also somebody that was part of Triple H's regime and was a significant part of that as well. This is also somebody who's been with the WWE for 11 years and actually worked his way up through the ranks from like literally like from the bottom all the way up to where he was as vice president of global television production. Now this is where it gets interesting. So apparently this is not the first time a potential Kevin Dunn successor has left the company. Because apparently any time that anyone is seen as a potential successor to Dunn, they have their life, and I quote, made difficult, and they get constantly criticized to WWE chairman Vince McMahon, who would then hear people talk negatively about the person in the spot.
Yep.
No wonder people leave. What are your thoughts on that as a whole? Given how this is somebody that, you know,
well, we've heard before that Kevin Dunn isn't the most easy person to work with, right?
Yeah.
We're also very, what's the word I'm looking for? Cognizant of the fact that Kevin Dunn very much holds on to his spot, right? And this person that departed, what was his name?
Michael Mansouri.
Mansouri. He had even directed episodes of Raw and SmackDown when Kevin Dunn wasn't around, right? So we know he was in it to win it. I will be very interested to see what comes out about this down the road, because I don't think we've got all the information.
Yeah. And this is something apparently that Mansouri put in months ago.
Yeah.
He had made it known that he was going to be done at the end of May in WWE. But Mansouri was actually first hired in 2009 as a production assistant and worked his way all the way up. So you have to admit, that's pretty impressive to go from being a production assistant in 2009 to directing many episodes of Raw, SmackDown, and even some pay-per-view events themselves. There were
people who were saying they thought he was a lifer. So,
yeah,
like I said, I don't think we've got the whole story there. I think there might be more going on. I personally can't wait until Dunn is somewhat forced retired. Out. I mean, there have been some videos on the interwebs recently of things like SmackDown having like 28 cuts in 38 seconds or something. Like, just a ridiculous amount of
over editing.
Yeah. I don't know. There's going to be a certain... we've been saying it for a while, but like, with Vince and Kevin Dunn still in control, things are going to get... what's the word I'm looking for? Harder to progress. Like, one of the things AEW and Impact and things like that have going for them is they've got people who are more in tune, in control, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, but we'll get to AEW.
Yep. So now I'm going to throw some things at Ben.
There is one thing I want to bring up.
All right, go for it.
I've wanted to say this for 2 weeks. Congratulations to Becky Lynch. Congratulations to
Seth Rollins,
who is on the run of his life. I think this whole Monday Night Messiah and being able to cut more personal promos has really helped Seth recently. Like, his run since like pre-WrestleMania has been really good. Like, he's been cutting some really good promos. And just the two of them, I'm not going to be Jim Cornette because fuck that guy. And that's all we need to say on Jim Cornette. Best of luck to the both of you. I hope parenthood treats you well.
Yeah, and we got to say, the Monday Night Raw segment with Asuka and Becky, so organic. Because here's the thing, Asuka didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, when they presented her the title in the ring, that was organic. That, like, her reaction was, like, that's the best why they
part
chose
her. Was, the best part is there was a bunch of rumors early on of, like, Becky's going to announce she's pregnant. And on Twitter, she posted a picture of a pregnancy test that was not positive. It was quite funny.
But we'll get more to that in a little bit because it relates to
Money in the Bank
as well. Yeah. That's the one thing. Some of the news stuff that we want to talk about are we tied into these pay-per-views directly. So I'm going to throw some stuff at you because we were talking about this off-air, and you just told me to throw it at the wall at you.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If we would have, like, usually we sit down and we've got a list of news notes, and we're like, let's talk about this, 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 and this, because we can have a good conversation about it. Me, on the other hand, I realized that 90% of the news notes we're talking about this week is like, I don't care. I've got nothing to say.
So I'm going to start with this one, and I'm going to group the three things into one because it all involves one person, and that's Lio Rush. So you've had Lio Rush go after Mark Henry. You've had Lio Rush talk about budding, and I sent you that one when it came out. Yeah. About the interview about where he pretty much talked poorly about Triple H and how they butted heads all the time about how he wanted his character to be. Talked about what his Monday Night Raw debut was like and kind of complained about that. And then randomly out of the blue for no reason went after Jim Cornette when Jim Cornette has never mentioned Lio Rush's name. And that's why I'm grouping it all together.
Of the three, I have no issue with anyone going after Jim Cornette because fuck that guy. Sad because I used to love Jim Cornette.
No, and I understand that, but I'm just saying that I'm lumping it all together because it's just, and you know, you and I were talking back and forth. You were actually the one that informed me about Mark Henry considering doing a lawsuit against Lio because of the things that Lio said about Mark Henry. And of course, Lio came back, was like, well, I'm going to file a lawsuit of my own if you file one on me. It's like, this guy is just taking himself completely out of the wrestling world.
Now, here's the other reason why I'm not saying anything here is for weeks, Mike has been sending me things about Lio Rush and going, fuck this guy, basically, on Facebook. And I've been like, dude, if you feel that way, write a fucking article to put on the website. And he's like, yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that.
And then I get busy. And then I get busy.
So, Mike.
Yes.
Mike, imagine you're me.
Okay.
Right? Let the rant build. Okay? And go.
Leo, you have so much talent in the world, but you need to stop acting like a little bitch, and you need to get better people around you. I know, because I know what people are around you, and they're not the right people to be in your ears. Just because they're family doesn't mean they're the right people to be giving you advice. Stop. Okay, that's my rant. Anyways,
that moving, it?
Yeah, that's it. I compressed it down into a smaller thing, because I want to move on. I don't want to spend forever talking about it.
All right.
But anyways, yeah. But I wanted to get that out for a while. But all right. So next thing, let's move on. This past week, Dark Side of the Ring did their season finale. It was the Owen Hart death leading into the episode. And we're not going to talk about the episode because I don't think either of us have watched it yet. Martha Hart went out and did a bunch of interviews. She did one for CBS Sports. She has stated that she has forgiven the Hart family, forgiven Vince McMahon, but then also at the same time, after saying "I forgive you," go on to bury them in the interviews. In response, WWE lawyer Jerry McDivitt came out with a statement that was then added into the CBS article afterwards, which honestly didn't make the WWE look good in that regards. What are your thoughts on this whole thing in general? And I'm not talking about the episode because, again, I don't think I know I haven't seen it. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No.
So not really.
How is any of this news? That's my reaction. Yeah. Like, Martha's stance since Owen died is she wanted nothing to do with the WWE. That has not changed. How is this news?
I think the bigger thing that came out of it, I think the reason that it came across my radar is because of the WWE statement for the lawyer. Because if I had just seen the interview, I just probably would have gone past it and just been like, okay, whatever. She's just doing an interview to promote the thing. That's perfectly fine. But then WWE put out a statement. And I'm actually going to use this analogy because it's something that I actually deal with in women's hockey for TXHT. And that's the PWHPA NWHL scenario. PWHPA is boycotting the NWHL. They have certain ordo heads who speak poorly about the NWHL, but the NWHL does not respond unless it is something that is completely libel or slanderous to the league. And that's where the issues come. It comes from that WWE statement from the lawyer. If they had stayed quiet, I don't think this would have blown up news-wise as a lot of people thought it would. Because it at first, it's just a regular interview. And then that comes out. And I think that's the big thing right there. That's why it became the news.
Sure, but there's... It's like, go with me on this one. Have you ever been part of like an internet forum thread?
Oh God, it's been years.
Like a web forum, right?
It's been years.
And you post. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, there's this new post. And you look at the thread and you realize it's a post from about 25 years ago that someone's gone in and put a new post in and it's reinvigorated the news thread from 25 years ago, but it's still the exact same.
Yeah.
That's what this is to me. There's no new. See, take the S off of news and it's new.
Yeah.
And there's nothing new here, if you ask me.
Yeah. And I have one question and then we'll move on. We'll actually move over to Money in the Bank.
Sure.
So with Dark Side of the Ring, this is the telling of the story from Martha and I believe a couple others. Mm-hmm. Has WWE, and keep in mind, I wasn't watching wrestling until late 2000, so this was before I started getting into it. Has WWE everly publicly talked about? Okay. That was the answer I needed to hear. So I that was just something on a curiosity from my end. So with that, let's move on to Money in the Bank, because we're going to do a quick run through of the card, and then we'll talk about the matches.
Yeah.
Because I know you have thoughts on some things.
Yeah.
All right. So on the pre-show, you had Jeff Hardy defeat Cesaro.
So remember when we were doing the show 2 weeks ago? And we were like, man, there's like six matches on the card. They're going to add like four tomorrow morning on Twitter. We were joking. They added two on Twitter with no build, just people in a match.
Yep. Jeff Hardy, Cesaro was one. And then MVP versus R-Truth was the other.
Bobby Lashley.
No, it was billed as MVP versus R-Truth.
Oh, okay.
I'll get to
that. But it was Bobby Lashley R-Truth, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah. So Jeff Hardy defeated Cesaro on the pre-show in a match that went 13 minutes, 30 seconds. Then on the main card, it opened up with the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match for the SmackDown Tag Team titles, which saw the New Day defeat the Forgotten Sons, Miz and Morrison, and the Lucha House Party in a 12-minute match. Next up, you had what was supposed to be MVP versus R-Truth, but before the match even started, Bobby Lashley came out and said, nah, you can have the night off, MVP. I got this. And then ended up squashing R-Truth in a minute 40 seconds. Then you had the SmackDown Women's Championship where Bayley defeated Tamina in 10 minutes, 30 seconds. Then for the WWE Universal title in 10 minutes, 55 seconds, you had Braun Strowman defeat Bray Wyatt. Then in a singles match for the WWE Championship, which lasted 19 minutes, 20 seconds, you had Drew McIntyre retain over Seth Rollins. And then I don't know how they got the times for this, so I'm not even going to bother with it. But in the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, you had Asuka defeat Carmella, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans, Nia Jax, and Shayna Baszler. And in the men's ladder match, you had Otis defeat AJ Styles, Aleister Black, Daniel Bryan, King Corbin, and Rey Mysterio. So, Ben?
Fuck this pay-per-view.
In which regards?
All of it. Where do you want me to start?
I'm like,
Jeff Hardy and Cesaro didn't need to happen. It was just there to be a match on the pre-show.
Yeah.
Right? New Day beating Forgotten Sons, Miz and Morrison, and Lucha House Party was absolutely the wrong result. You missed an opportunity to make a tag team there by putting the belts on the Forgotten Sons. If they'd have won that match, they'd have been instant superstars on the blue brand. Bobby Lashley and R-Truth is a waste of my life. Bayley and Tamina, they missed an opportunity to do some really interesting stuff with Bayley and Sasha here. Though props to Tamina for putting in the best performance of her career so far. There was that really interesting clothesline spot on the outside of the ring where she like threw Bayley against the ropes on the outside of the ring. And like, as she bounced off, she clotheslined her in midair. That was a really nice little spot. Braun Strowman, Bray Wyatt, fuck that match. Just fuck it. Fuck everything to do with Braun Strowman's title run so far. Fuck the match with Goldberg. Fuck this match. Fuck the match he's got coming up with Miz and Morrison. Give him a serious match. Give him a serious competitor. Give him a serious opponent. Please. Otherwise, you're going to turn the first title run for the Monster Among Men into a goddamn joke. Oh, wait, you already did that. Drew McIntyre against Seth Rollins. Good match. Didn't need the handshake at the end. You know? And as for the title matches, they were going so well. Everything inside the building was so good. From Asuka starting with the crossbody to
Baron Corbin accidentally throwing a weight through the wall.
Through the mirror.
Yeah.
I hope that starts a bad luck storyline. I really do. To AJ Styles seeing the pictures of The Undertaker and getting spooked. To the food fight. Vince's office. The thing with AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan and Vince's office. The Dana Brooke pulling down the Money in the Bank briefcase.
And in Stephanie the Money in the Bank like, conference room.
Money, and Stephanie being like, what? Does Dana get to keep all the money that was in that briefcase?
I hope so. She earned it. She pulled it down.
But then you got to the post-food fight, right? And everything kind of went downhill. Carmella gets powerbombed through a table, and you don't see her again in the entire match, right?
Yeah.
Which we've seen people kick out at two after that happening, so weird, right? Dana Brooke gets put out of the match by having her back rammed into a soda machine.
Yep. It's almost like having your back slammed into the ring post.
Yeah. Yet more forgiving, because the front of the soda machines give.
Yep.
And then Shayna Baszler gets put out of the match by having her back rammed into a wall. Let me point this out to you. Three of the six women in the Money in the Bank ladder match never even made it to the roof. What the actual shit? Like, what the actual fuck, WWE? As for the men's Money in the Bank, my only real complaint, right, is the ending.
It's not Baron Corbin murdering both Rey Mysterio and Alistair.
He clearly didn't.
I know, that was the joke, though. Nobody knew.
Like if you saw the fly around, they only dropped about, like, six the thing feet. They get throw off, they got dropped about 6 feet.
Yeah.
That's less than four. That's about the same as falling off the top rope.
Yep.
My only main complaint with that is the ending.
Because of the fumbling between AJ and Baron. And
no, I quite liked that. They've been very creative recently with the ending of ladder matches, right?
Yeah.
However, it felt a bit similar to the Kofi Kingston, Jey Uso, Jim Morrison ending from Mania?
Yes and no.
Where Jay and Kofi are fighting over the thing and it falls down and Morrison catches them.
No. Morrison was... No, all three of them had their hands on it, but Morrison had his hands on the belt, whereas Uso and Kofi had their hands on the bar.
I'm just saying that's kind of the...
Yeah,
the...
but I get what you're saying, yeah.
And... I've gone on record saying I don't get the Otis thing. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know why it's a big thing, right?
Yeah.
They made this big joke about the fact that he was too heavy to climb a ladder. That be a star, WWE.
Yeah, because that was the one thing. They tried having him climb the ladder.
And the bottom rung snapped.
Yeah. It's like, haven't we seen him break out a double durable ladder before?
Not even just that, but way to promote body positivity, dudes. Like, you run a Be a Star campaign about not bullying people. Just, yeah. And then, sorry, I'm going to take a swig of my coffee because... I just imagine being Kermit the Frog with the tea right now. And on top of that, while I like the fact that AJ now has something to, as a heel, to be like, hey, I pulled that down. I had control of it, right?
Yeah.
I also don't like that. One thing I will never like about Money in the Bank matches ending like this is the uncertainty of the thing, right? Like, you'll now be like, oh, Otis, your fan favorite, but he didn't actually pull the briefcase down, did he?
No. It's almost similar to the very first Women's Money in the Bank where Ellsworth grabbed it and just kind of, here you go, Carmella, and just drops it to Carmella.
Yeah.
Except slightly different because you had two guys fighting over it. It slipped out of both of their hands, and Otis just happened to catch it.
Now, with the interesting thing that happened on SmackDown last night, with AJ Styles getting traded to SmackDown, they may do a thing now where AJ's like, hey, Otis, that's mine.
See, I think they're not going to do that right away. And it's because if you look at the brackets now for the Intercontinental title tournament, you have Daniel Bryan versus Jeff Hardy, and they're doing the whole Jeff Hardy redemption storyline and how he wants to
get to that. I've got things to say about that.
And how he wants to get his fifth title, Intercontinental title. And then you have Elias versus AJ Styles. I predict it's going to be Jeff versus AJ for the IC title. I think they should do that match at Backlash.
But if they don't do the AJ Styles thing right now, it won't make sense to do it later.
Yeah. And I get what you're saying, but because, like, in a way, the AJ Jeff Hardy story kind of writes itself too because of their history in TNA.
Yeah, because they're going to reference that.
They've interestingly been referencing, like, when they did the Shinsuke AJ match, they referenced their Japan match.
New Japan Pro Wrestling does not run house shows in the same country as WWE.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's something that they can do. But I also see your point of, say, hey, Elias beats AJ. And
or
AJ then shifts his focus over to Otis.
Don't put AJ in the tournament.
Well, he's already advanced in the tournament.
Yeah, but don't put him in there to begin with.
Yeah.
Put Cesaro in there or insert any one of any other amount of people.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's, I think they did as a way to announce the trade of AJ going to SmackDown. Although there could have
just announced the trade.
Yeah. There could have been better ways to announce the AJ trade to SmackDown.
And just while we're on the subject, Sheamus should have won that match, not Jeff Hardy. But this, because I really want to see Sheamus win the Continental title before he retires, because it's the only title he hasn't won in WWE. But this is a very interesting thing that we ran into with these two, is they've been pushing Jeff Hardy really hard on SmackDown recently with the,
the redemption and stuff like that,
right? Yeah. But they've also been pushing Sheamus super hard, right? So, of all the people to put together in the first round, the two people you've been pushing the hardest, why?
I think there's going to be more to it than we see. I could either see Sheamus screwing Jeff in the Daniel Bryan match, or have Jeff win the title, and then Sheamus wins the title. Yeah, takes it off of Jeff. So I think there's going to be a lot more to the Sheamus Jeff Hardy storyline.
But getting back to Money in the Bank.
One thing that needs to be talked about is the
one thing. One thing I do want to say.
Yeah.
Cinematic matches are the future for WWE. They do them so well.
Yes.
Like up until the moment where the people got eliminated and didn't make it to the route, up until right after the food fight, the Money in the Bank matches were on course to be my favorite matches of the year to this point. And that's saying something, because I'm a guy who likes a little bit of comedy in his matches. Just the thing with Vince, the Aleister Black locking people in the locking AJ in the room with the casket.
It was really good. It was really, like, they really well thought it out. And interestingly, because this was filmed weeks in advance, they knew AJ was coming back. And of course, a lot of people are like, oh, well, why is AJ back and so early, blah, blah, blah. Now we know why.
Yeah.
They're teasing another match with
Taker. They're not letting that thing with The Undertaker go, are they?
Well, here's the thing. One, you had the teases of AJ looking at the photo, and then he opens up the one door. There's the casket.
Yeah.
So you had that tease right there. But then you have on Sunday, also on the latest episode of Undertaker Last Ride.
Yeah.
Taker's watching matches and he sees that, like, AJ wrestling somebody. I forget who he's wrestling at that time. And he goes, that's a guy who I want to wrestle. He's like Shawn Michaels. He gets it.
Yeah.
So it's like, now you see the foreshadowing of what led to the Boneyard.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing what could become maybe AJ redeeming himself and maybe retiring The Undertaker.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. But until
The Undertaker unretires again.
Yeah.
Because Roman Reigns has retired him like six times at this point.
Yeah. But the thing is they did some good foreshadowing. But then when you go on to the women's side of things.
Yeah.
You noted how like three of them didn't even make it to the roof. Original ending that was apparently planned was to have Shayna Baszler win the match.
Yes, please.
However, this is also at the time of filming is around the time they found out that Becky was pregnant.
And?
So they changed the finish to have Asuka win. So Asuka become the champion, as we saw 2 weeks ago on Raw.
That doesn't...
Because they want to have Shayna and Nia be the top two heels chasing the title, so they're making Asuka the face.
Right. But that doesn't give you an excuse to have three of the women sit out
and
a
I
third agree, of the match.
And I agree with that.
Of the women in that match, I'm interested in like two of them.
Yeah.
Neither of them made it to the roof.
Yeah. And I agree.
So I was like, click, I'm done. The best thing after the there was that one moment where Dana Brooke hit Nia Jax with a chair, right? And it sounded like she hit someone with a shotgun. And I was like, dang, girl. After that, the only moment on the roof that I think was any good for the women was when Asuka stopped Baron Corbin getting the belt. That was the best bit.
Well, I liked how that sequence went down with Asuka and Baron because, you know, Asuka's going for the women's briefcase, and for whatever reason, Barry Corbin is trying to stop her from getting the women's briefcase. I'm like, what are you doing, Baron? She's going for the women's. Go for the men's, you doofus. You know, but it added a good element to it that I liked.
No, it didn't. Three women not making it to the
No. I'm talking about the Asuka Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that little element there because it's like, dude, what are you doing? You could both go, because at the time, Asuka's still a heel.
Yeah.
In this match. Like, she just obviously went face the moment she got the women's title with the Becky announcement.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on, Baron, you're both heels. You can both get the briefcases together, you know?
Yeah. Like I said, everything that whole match kind of went to shit after they did the food fight.
Yeah. But you gotta like some of the cameos that they did. Brother Love.
Some of them, yes. Some of them utterly unneeded. Yeah. Brother Love didn't need to be there. They could have done, or they could have done it better.
Yeah.
Rather than just having walking out of a toilet.
Yeah, I got a little chuckle out of that. The janitor apparently is Bruce Pritchard's son.
Doink the Clown.
Yeah, the Doink the Clown wannabe, nobody knows who that was. But the janitor was Bruce Pritchard's son, from what I read. You gotta love Paul Heyman.
Oh yeah, that was
leading up to the food fight, he's just there like, oh yeah, I would have fun with this. And then like everyone shows up, he just picks up a like a pie or something. He just walks off. I love Paul Heyman.
When I saw that food fight start, I was like, well, someone's getting killed by Brock Lesnar.
but yeah, I and then real quick, I want to touch base on the two main title matches, Strowman and the Drew. For the Drew McIntyre match, I know you said you didn't really like the handshake at the end.
Yep.
I kind of do, because I think it's something that Drew McIntyre is trying to do to shape himself as a different type of champion.
I have no problem with Drew offering the handshake.
But at the same time, even though Seth accepted, you can see the confliction within Seth, and you can see that follow through into the next night.
Nah. If they're going to portray, the very next night they started portraying Seth as this like shell-shocked, catatonic dude. He should have, the three counts should have hit, and he should have been like catatonic from there, right?
Right.
He should have just been like, drew off the hand, he should have just like stared at it.
Stared at it and stared at it.
And walked off, right? Yeah. That was my problem. It wasn't that Drew offered the handshake. That's cool. I'm okay with that. It was Seth accepting the handshake.
Right. Now, and I understand.
Especially, now, if Seth had accepted the handshake and then turned face, okay.
Yeah.
But he went on to almost become more of a heel the next night. That's why it didn't make sense to me.
But I like the fact that Drew's doing it. And I actually want to see where that continues to go. I want to see what happens at Backlash when he takes on Lashley for the title, and see if he offers the same gesture. Because I can tell, you can kind of tell that Drew's trying to take this in a different direction, especially with the pandemic and stuff like that. And good on Drew for that. For really trying to not let, you know how they say that don't let the belt define you, you define the belt. You can really tell that Drew is taking this seriously, and he's doing everything in his power to define the belt in a meaningful way.
Oh, for sure.
And I'd really love that about Drew. Now we go to Strowman Wyatt, which was actually the only match outside of the Money in the Bank stuff that was pre-taped. And the reason it was pre-taped, because of all the puppeteers and stuff. They didn't want to showcase that on like entrances and stuff, which is understandable. Right finish for having Strowman retain.
Yep.
Now we know that going into Backlash, you're going to have The Miz and Morrison versus Strowman in a handicap match, because they're doing exact same thing with Miz in the title that they did with the Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt, Fiend storyline, where to extend a feud, they're using The Miz as kind of that conduit to keep it going. However, did you watch SmackDown last night?
Nope.
Okay, so the open to SmackDown was the Dirt Sheet, which, by the way, massive props to Miz and Morrison for continuing to use the Howard Finkel intro. Love it. So they're doing their thing, like they're random, like, and they're making fun of Strowman and his title. And Strowman comes out, and Morrison's like, "Hey, Miz, don't worry, I got this." And he's like talking all this smack. And Miz is trying to pull him back. He goes, no, he doesn't really mean that, blah, blah, blah. And Strowman goes, "Oh, so is that a challenge?" And Miz was like, no. And then like Morrison's like, "Yeah, it's a challenge." And it's like, "Challenge accepted." And then Miz just goes on the mic, "Damn it." Funny. I really like that segment that led into the match last night. I got a great, especially from Miz. That was entertaining for me. But yeah, that's what's happening. They're just extending this feud of Wyatt and Strowman by utilizing the Miz, which also tells you how much WWE trusts Miz to help flesh out storylines. So it'll be interesting. Ready for Double or Nothing? All right. So now it is time to talk about Double or Nothing, which takes place tonight. There are 9 matches for this card. So Ben, let's just go through the card and give our thoughts on each one as we go through them.
Sure.
All right. So, and we're working off of what Wikipedia has. So we're going off the order that they have them in. The first match that is listed is Cody with Arn Anderson and Brandi Rhodes versus Lance Archer, who will have Jake Roberts in his corner, in the tournament final for the inaugural AEW TNT Championship. So, what are your thoughts on this match? Don't care?
Let me tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was this pay-per-view called Full Gear. And on this show was a match between Cody Rhodes and Chris Jericho. And if Cody Rhodes lost that match, he will never challenge for the world title again. And lo, did he fight valiantly. But did he ever? And then he lost. And thus so it was that Cody Rhodes could never challenge for the world title again. So fuck it, let's just make another belt.
Yeah.
Cody in the final? Surprise. So far, the brackets have played out exactly as I said they would.
We said they would.
No, you said that.
No,
Dustin might not make. No, I had to talk you into Dustin making it through to face Lance Archer. You thought they might put Kip Sabian through.
Yeah, oh, that's true. But I also knew that if they did do Dustin versus Archer, you're automatically going to get Cody versus Archer.
Yeah.
So,
They've been teasing Cody versus Lance Archer from the moment that Lance debuted. It wasn't ever going to be anything else in the finals of this tournament when we saw they were on opposite sides of the bracket. This might have been the most predictable tournament in wrestling history. To be honest.
And there's been some pretty predictable tournaments.
And here's the problem I'm finding. Right? Now, don't hate me, internet. I don't care about 90% of this card. I just don't. I'm finding it very hard to care about AEW at the moment, when 90% of the matches that are happening are against non-signed talent. And while they might be getting a move or two in, it's kind of academic as who's going to win. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, you and I, we talked about this, I think it was, Wednesday or Thursday morning? Wednesday night or Thursday morning?
Might have been.
Yeah, because I was trying to watch, you know, I've actually got a chance to now finally get to sit down and watch, you know, like Raw and SmackDown and NXT and AEW finally, because we got cable into my room legitimately. It's awesome. And I remember Wednesday night, I started watching AEW Dynamite and I turned it off for NXT within 20 minutes because it's not just the thing that you mentioned about like the matches and stuff like that. To me, the presentation just feels off. It's just not vibing.
I know. And before the internet collectively shits itself, I'm aware that not all of the matches are squash talent, but a lot of them are. And Jericho has done his best to get certain people over, but they're still unsigned talent. And at least, say what you will about WWE, at least they're still doing superstar versus superstar. And yes, I'm aware that not all of the AEW matches are squash talent. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah.
The other thing about The other thing with AEW recently is the few people I cared about haven't been on TV much, which is really bad. Now, I consume all of AEW's programming. I consume the Road 2 shows. I consume Being the Elite. I consume Dynamite. I do my best to keep up with Dark, right? I've just not cared about a whole lot of stuff for a very long time when it comes to AEW. Mainly because the people I want to see weren't on the telly. And when they were on the telly, they were being treated horribly. I'm looking at you, Jimmy Havoc. Right?
Yeah.
But now, but like MJF's back now, so might see more of that. Hangman's back, apparently. So I'll be... And no, I've not just joined the Hangman bandwagon since AEW. I've been a big Hangman Page fan since I started watching Ring of Honor and he was there. I still don't like what they're doing a whole lot with like Shawn Spears. Santana and Ortiz have been missing until other than the Bubbly Bunch stuff, which I could watch on YouTube. Like, you know, like, I don't know. And I, dare I say it? Yeah, fuck it, I'll say it. I don't care about the main event scene right now because Brody Lee's boring as fuck.
Yeah. And like I said, it's like, what was it? We were talking about, oh, that was what one of the opening segments for Dynamite for this week was. It was Brody Lee and the Dark Order. And obviously the storyline is that Brody Lee stole the title belt from Moxley and all this other stuff. And, you know, he promoted 10 to like this new rank within the Dark Order. And gave him the Moxley, which ended up becoming like a squash match there. And then you had Moxley essentially break 10's arm with a chair.
So this would be the same 10 that they've been building over the last like 2 or 3 weeks to be this huge, buff, utterly unstoppable machine.
Yeah. That 10.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I have no problem with Moxley beating him. Problem with Moxley squashing him.
Yeah. So real quick, Cody versus Lance. Who do you think gets it? Oh, yeah. We just, well, I mean, we have like, here's the thing. You know, AEW at the end of the day, when they put out a card, something for like their pay-per-views, they do put out good wrestling that we do enjoy watching. It's just, you know, their storytelling in a way is not the greatest. Presentation is not fully there. And at times, things just don't vibe.
Yep. As for
and who we wins, wanted to, and,
as
and we,
for who wins, yeah. Cody or Lance Archer.
Yeah.
Right. I'll be honest with you. I don't care. Because if Cody wins, it's just like, oh, this is how they get around him not being able to challenge for the world title. If Lance Archer wins, eh. I don't like him. I don't find him that entertaining in the ring. The best thing about Lance Archer is Jake Roberts. Give the title to Jake.
Yeah.
Just give the title to Jake.
Well, not only that, but here's the other thing. You're also looking at this.
Just have this, like, have Cody and Lance get decide that neither of them want to actually wrestle, right? And make this Arn Anderson against Jake the Snake. And I might care.
Yeah, and here's the other dynamic to this, too. This is going to be Lance Archer's... I know Archer has had a few matches already on Dynamite, but this will be his pay-per-view debut in AEW.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah, because he had to obviously fight in the tournament.
Well, no, because I can't remember if he appeared in a previous one, but
no, he debuted after the last. He debuted after Revolution. Okay. Because how it was is the night after Revolution, Jake the Snake Roberts came out and cut the promo on Cody.
Yeah.
And then the next week is when, like 2 weeks later is like when Archer debuted. But you also have this dynamic where you can kind of look at it from the Sean Spears aspect in a way. You know, if Cody beats Archer, where does Archer go from there? We've seen what's happened to Sean Spears since losing to Cody at All Out. And now you have Archer. Archer needs to win the match more than Cody does.
Yep.
And that's the reality to this thing. And hopefully they do the smart thing and do put the title on Archer.
Well, let's be fair. The smart thing would have been putting the title on Darby. Yeah. But
oh, you're not going to get an argument from me on that. But we'll get to Darby in a little bit because he's involved with another match. Next up on the card, you have MJF with Wardlow versus Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
And it should be noted that as of this writing or at the time of this recording, Jungle Boy is not going to have anybody in his corner because Luchasaurus is involved in the match. And this past Wednesday, MJF dispatched Marco Stunt on Dynamite. I think it's two up and coming young talents in this match, but MJF is the hotter one. And
say up and coming young talents,
well, keep
you
in
mean
mind,
Jungle Boy, who's up and coming, and you mean MJF, who is firmly planted at the top of the card.
Well, keep it. Well. They're also how old again?
It's not the point.
Yeah, but they're both young. One's up and coming. One's cemented. I'm changing the language for you, Ben.
Thank you.
So, I expect a good match. I think this could be the match because you have two guys who are going to go out there and put it all on the line in this match. But it's also MJF, and I see MJF coming out on top in this one
for sure.
Especially the fact that he's been away for so long.
If he doesn't come out on top, it's because of like interference or he gets DQ'd or something.
Yeah. Next up on the match list, we have Jon Moxley defending the AEW World title against Brody Lee. Smart move here is Moxley retaining.
I don't fucking care.
Yep.
You remember how AEW was all like, hey man, you know what we're going to do?
Not bringing a bunch of WWE talents.
We're going to have a power ranking. And then the number two person on the power ranking, or the number one person on the power ranking, will be the person that challenges for the title.
Is Brody Lee even...
Lo and behold, if you check the most recent power rankings... Brody Lee is number three on the power rankings.
Who's number one?
Cody.
Oh. The guy who can't fight for the title.
Number two? Lance Archer.
Who's fighting Cody for the TNT title.
Doesn't make sense to have your two divisions merged.
Well, that's a funny thing that you say that, Ben. Because did you know that per Cody, there's not going to be a ranking system for the TNT title?
Yeah, of course there isn't.
It's going to have a life of its own.
So, just to point out for a minute, not only is the person who can't challenge for the title technically number one contender, the person beneath him in number two, number one and number two, are competing for the secondary belt. Darby Allin versus Colt Cabana versus Orange Cassidy versus Joey Janela versus Scorpio Sky versus Kip Sabian versus Frankie Kazarian versus Luchasaurus versus...
To be determined. Small note, originally Rey Fénix was going to be in this match. However, due to the bump that he took on Dynamite, and this is the beginning of, actually, this is perfect timing because now we're going to get into some matches that have been changed because of this.
Yeah.
Rey Fénix went for a bump, and nobody caught him.
Went for an outside dive.
Yeah, and nobody caught him.
Yeah.
Landed really hard on the floor. He was able to walk out on his own power after being down for a while.
Flat back bump on the floor.
So Fénix has been removed. Joey Janela is taking his place. That was actually something that was announced this morning.
So TBD is going to be a new debuting wrestler, right? It's got to be.
It has to be. It's either that or it's somebody that's already on the roster that we just haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
It has to be one of those two.
Yeah.
But the winner of this casino ladder match will win a future AEW World Championship match.
The interesting thing here is that both Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian are in this match.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense to me, but oh well.
You know, and looking at the who's in this match, there's really only two that pop out at me of who I would really like to win. And that's Scorpio Sky and Darby.
Okay. The two, the three that stick out to me are Darby, Orange Cassidy, because as much as I may not want him to win, he's over as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
And TBD.
See, I was thinking Orange Cassidy for me, but...
Then why didn't you say him?
I see him doing more of a spot that's going to take him out of it.
As always with ladder matches, the unannounced participant is probably the most likely winner.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see who is the TBD at the same time.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that obviously... Like, I'm working off of who's actually been announced, not who's TBD.
But that's the thing, is usually surprise entrants are the most likely winners.
Yeah. Like Brock Lesnar.
Unless the surprise entrant is like Vicky Guerrero. Right? Like
or like the last year's Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar.
Brock shows up. Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm intrigued by who the ninth participant is. I'm also intrigued.
I also think this match is going to be a complete mess.
Yeah. Like, I'm also finding it very interesting that they're doing a 9-man ladder match. And you still have all these restrictions right now. And it's been announced that on Wednesday on Dynamite, there's going to be a battle royal. Don't know how many people are going to be in it.
It's but like a 3-person battle royal.
But there's going to be a battle royal to face whoever is the TNT champion. And I'm like looking at this going like... How are they making a workaround around this? Because like you're not just looking at it from a wrestler aspect. Okay, there's 9 wrestlers, but you have a couple. Maybe you have to have 2 or 3 referees. You have to have camera people. You're kind of going over that limit pretty quickly. So it's kind of interesting in that regards. Next up, you have Nyla Rose defending the AEW Women's World Championship against Hikaru Shida in a no disqualification, no countout match. This could be good. This is actually one of the few matches I'm really looking forward to. And that's Nyla versus Shida.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, we're both fans of Nyla, and I actually really do like Hikaru Shida.
Yeah, I think the actual match will be quite good. Whether I'm looking forward to it. Is it?
All right.
Yeah, it's just Takara and Nyla having a match. There's no story here. There's not. It's the same problem that the women's division has had forever. Yeah. Usually I'm a big fan of storylines that are, hey, I'm really good at doing other wrestling. You're really good at doing other wrestling. Let's do the wrestling, right?
Yep.
But that's when it's an actual storyline, right? This is just, well, you're number one contender. Let's do a wrestle. There's no
real
substance.
Yeah.
And that's plagued the AEW women's division for
since day one, essentially.
Ever.
Yeah. next up, you have Penelope Ford with Kip Sabian versus Chris Statlander. This match was originally Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander on Wednesday Night Dynamite. Nyla Rose was body slammed onto Britt Baker and ended up tearing her ACL. So now Britt is going to be out for 6 to 9 months with that injury, hence the match replacement. So this one, yeah, I kind of, you know, this is goes right what you just said, where two people just thrown together. Whereas Statlander and Baker, I understand, actually had something.
They had a bit of a thing going on, yeah.
Going into this match. Next up you have, and this match has been confirmed for the pre-show, Private Party versus the Best Friends to determine the number one contender to the AEW World Tag Team titles.
If you've been paying any attention to being the Elite, you know Private Party's winning this one. Because they have beef with Hangman.
All right.
Like, it's not even a contest. Like, Best Friends haven't been even been on. Now, Private Party have only been on actual, like, Dynamite or whatever once or twice. But they've been being heavily featured on Being the Elite, where they have a storyline going on where they think Hangman Page paid someone to attack them. So...
Interesting. Next up, you have the Stadium Stampede match, which was filmed yesterday, where it's Matt Hardy and the Elite, consisting of Adam Page, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks, versus the Inner Circle of Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, Sammy Guevara, and Santana and Ortiz. This is going to be AEW's attempt at a cinematic match. Now, question for you, because this is something we talked about for Money in the Bank a couple weeks ago. So when we learned that Money in the Bank, the Money in the Bank matches were being taped, there were rumors that they were going to have its segment throughout the card with the live matches. They obviously did not do that, and they actually showed the Money in the Bank matches in their entirety as the main event of the card, which is the smart move. This match, as described by the rules of a Stadium Stampede match, the match starts in the ring, which will be at the 50-yard line.
Yep.
But the match can take place anywhere in the stadium or on the field.
Yep.
Could this be the one that starts off the pay-per-view and then just be we get seen throughout the night?
I think it's got the – it's not got the what I'm looking for. It's not got the legs for that, I don't think.
Okay.
I think this is going to... I mean, it possibly could, just because AEW want to beat not WWE. But, yeah, I think it would be better served airing as one block.
Rather than splitting it up amongst throughout the matches or throughout the night. Yeah.
for something like, I've always liked the idea of like a pre-show match, like spilling over into the main event, or like an early match that gets thrown out because both people are brawling on the outside and they brawl to the back and they come back every now and again. I've always liked that idea, but it's got to be with done with something that's not as obvious as this,
yeah,
for it to work properly.
Yeah, because like a good example of what you're talking about is like the Roddy Piper Goldust.
Yeah.
You know, at WrestleMania. Yeah. That's a great example right there of that.
Yeah.
And then the last match, and this is a match that just randomly happened on Wednesday on Dynamite. Dustin Rhodes versus Sean Spears and Tully Blanchard.
Sure.
Okay. So that's Double or Nothing.
Double or Don't Care.
Yeah. So that's the pay-per-view there. And of course, you can watch it tonight on Bleacher BR Live, Fight TV, whatever you use to watch the AEW pay-per-views on. So Ben, I think it's now time to talk some positive in wrestling. How do we want to start this? Do we want to go with your thing? Or okay. So Ben just did the finger gun point at me, so it's me. So one thing that we didn't touch base on in news and notes is about Shad Gaspard. We wanted to save that for here at the end in the positive because obviously everyone knows what happened. Sunday, he was at the beach with his family. A current rip tide came in and pulled him out. His last words was "save my son" to the lifeguards, which they did. So he was found like Wednesday morning. He literally died a hero. And all the stories that we're hearing about him now just makes you feel for him and his family. And I actually wanted to share a story about Shad. It's really about Crime Time, but I wanted to talk about Shad specifically because it was stuff that I saw him do. So we all remember WrestleMania 23, the Battle of the Billionaires, Donald Trump versus Vince McMahon. And at the Monday Night Raw in DC, which I believe was either 2 weeks before Mania or the Monday before Mania, because DC used to be the home for the Go Home Raw. I was with some friends and we actually saw Crime Time walking around outside the arena. And we actually got to meet Shad and JTG. And they're filming stuff for Raw that night, for stuff to be aired throughout the night. And I just remember, how nice he was to all of us, and same with JTG. But I remember specifically, Shad would go out and he would try to find kids to get put on camera on purpose. And it's like, he was like, no, let's get this kid on TV. Let's make this kid's day. And it was so cool. And it was, you know, to be able to like look back and reflect on that. It's, you know, it makes you see what type of a great person he was. And, you know, and it's really sad that, you know, about what happened. So that's my positive. It was just being able to see that interaction with Shad Gaspard and all the fans, and all, especially with the children. It was a great moment, you know, and something that you won't forget.
Yeah. And of course,
you know,
rest in peace, Shad.
Yeah. So
as for me, I have a thing.
You have a thing. Well,
now I don't have a whole lot of positives to talk about in wrestling at the moment, because it's not a whole lot of positive going on in wrestling at the moment, in my opinion. I think it's quite a lot of bad. So what we decided to do was, last Sunday was my birthday.
Happy birthday, Ben!
And Mike had ordered me a something. It arrived yesterday. So I'm going to open it live on air. I've not opened it. The only thing I know is the front says it's from WWE.
Yep.
So.
Foreshadowing.
I wonder if this is my contract to work on creative.
Shit, I wish I had those strings to pull.
Let's see here. I'm not going to look at the manifest. And it is... Ooh, what is this? Well, I know these are the title belt things because that's what my Intercontinental title came in. Oh, dude.
So, why don't you tell everyone what it is real quick?
It is one of the mini titles. And it is the United Kingdom Championship.
So, two stories to this. Story one, I remember a while back you saying, like, oh, if I'm able to do it, I would get the UK title.
I'd absolutely get a UK belt, and I'm going to at some point.
That was the motivation for getting you the mini UK title. Yeah. Now, on top of this, my original – you ready for the original game plan of how to present this to you was? Awesome Con. Because I was going to talk to Ben Penrod, and I was going to talk to one of the cosplay guests at the con who's big into wrestling and stuff like that, and talk to them about doing a presentation during Awesome Mania at Awesome Con. And one of the ideas was, especially the fact that he's out injured right now, get Xavier Woods to do the presentation.
Oh.
So, like, that was kind of like what I wanted to do, but then all this stuff happened. So it's like, but one way or the other, I still wanted to get that for you. I love you, buddy. And I'm glad
love
that you
love
it.
Love you too, man. Love you too.
Look at that. Positive in wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. If I have to pick an actual positive thing in wrestling, going to say all the stuff Seth Rollins is doing right now, especially impregnating Becky Lynch. But no, I'm really enjoying the way the Messiah storyline is playing out. And it actually gave me an idea of how I would book Raw at the moment, but I can't. I've been not doing a booking segment, so I'm not going to go into it. So,
yeah. But
yeah. Let's wrap it up, dude.
Yeah. So with that, Ben,
we were almost under an hour and a half. Let's keep it that way.
Yeah, exactly. So with that, Ben, where can the people find you on the social media?
Find me at Bob T Goldfish on the Twitters. You can find me doing the video game thing at twitch.tv/321_TV. You can find out more about that at 321TV on the Twitters.
Right, and then you can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course everything else, txhdhockey.com, and for the show /awesomemania. So with that, Ben, take us away.
So yeah, it is me, Ben Taylor, aka Rib Cracker. Guys, gals, and online pals. In the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace!